Okay, let's go to the capital of Turkey, Ankara now, where Sinem Kusurlu joins us live from a crisis centre. Sinem, we've been hearing how the government has been accused of a slow rescue response in many of these hard-hit areas. What are they saying to you? What is the latest when it comes to getting aid out there?
They say it was difficult to reach out to these areas at first because the airports were closed and because the climate, the weather conditions didn't allow it to happen. And having spoken to the officials in the Turkish Disaster Management Agency, they also acknowledged that it was difficult for them to reach out to some places at the very beginning. For instance, Hatay, Turkey's border city with Syria, is one of them. And the damage in the city, the catastrophe, especially in the city center, Antakya, is huge. On the very first day of the earthquake, we had no information about Hatay, for instance, because the runways of the airport was damaged. There were three other airports like this. But as of yesterday, as the vice president announced, Hatay Airport resumed flights, and the first flight from national airline carrier Turkish Airlines landed in Antakya, which will contribute on bringing the aid to the people in need in those areas. But of course, we have spoken to some military sources as well, as the area right now, those 10 cities are under state of emergency, and military is involved. They are providing help to the search and rescue teams, and they are helping out for public order. And they told us that on the very first day, since most of those cities that were affected by the earthquake were going through heavy weather conditions, it was very difficult for them, for their helicopters and planes to take off as well. That's why they had to use drones, which were unmanned, and it had no risk. So everything came together. But of course, still, many say, the experts have been were warning that there would be an earthquake in that area. Maybe it was bigger than expected in terms of the affected area, the scale. But they still accuse the government for being unprepared for that.
Okay, Sinem Kusurlu there for us in Ankara. Good to speak to you. Just let's return back to those pictures that we were looking at on our screens there, that live picture of that box. Yeah, there we are. If you're just joining us, those are from Kahramanmaraş, where rescue crews are currently working to free a mother and her newborn child. So very delicate work by the rescue workers. Apparently, they are still alive under that rubble. They've been there for 7 days. So let's go to Stephanie Decker, who is somewhere close to the scene in Kahramanmaraş. What are you hearing about that rescue operation of that mother and her newborn child?
We are at the scene. Basically, it's been going on since last night. There is obviously Turkish workers here, volunteers, a Spanish rescue team. I just spoke to them. Basically, they identified with thermal imagery at least two people alive. They said they weren't going to speculate on who exactly they were. There are rumors that it is a mother and a newborn, potentially also a grandmother. Rumors that the grandmother may not be alive. What they're doing now, and we can probably, Fadi just shows you a little bit of the scene, and this is some good news that everybody needs here. If this is going to be something that we end up seeing, people being brought alive 7 days later. So there you can probably see the Spanish rescue teams. You have obviously the local Turkish workers, the military's come in here as well, because of now the news that this pretty much confirmed that you have at least two people alive under the rubble. What they're doing is they're digging a hole through what still seem to be quite intact shops here. We believe them to be two or three buildings down in the rubble from what we're being told. So a tunnel is being dug this way. Another tunnel is being dug from the side. And again, it's meticulous work because it's so sensitive when you are trying to get to survivors. We were just talking to a Turkish volunteer at another site. He says he has volunteered in many other earthquakes. He went to Indonesia. He said, I have never seen the amount of destruction that we have here. He says the way we work when we identify a survivor is then they call in the teams with specialized equipment. And he says, but it is so slow because we have to take utmost care not to, you know, cause any damage to the buildings that are already structurally damaged, to perhaps cause any injury or death on those survivors. So this is why it's taking so much time. I can tell you there's a lot of media here. It's been 7 days of reporting, majority, I would say, of death and destruction and heartbreak. So this kind of news, when people hear on the seventh day, a week on, that there may be survivors, is something that everyone certainly is hoping for. But again, a meticulous task, and it is going to take time.
OK. Thank you for that. Stephanie Decker there for us in Karamanmaraş, where we believe rescue crews are trying to free a mother and her newborn child. Let's go to our correspondent, Rasul Serda, who is live for us on the Turkish-Syrian border, where aid has been making its way into Syria. So talk us through the situation where you are, particularly in northwest Syria, where there's been so much criticism about aid reaching that part of the country.
Definitely here there is a huge criticism toward the international community. Syrians saying that the international community has helped so little so far. But the only thing that the international community is telling them is that we are with you. But however, they said that we need much more than words. So we are in front of Cilvegözü border crossing. Right against that, there is a Bab el Hawa, the Syrian side. And a little ago, there has been six trucks from the United Nations aid convoys, and they just passed the border. And these aids are going to be delivered to the people in Northwest. And a little bit later, there will be another aid convoy coming from Qatar. So Qataris have delivered the aid, the first aid convoy yesterday, and also with the military, so with the medical equipments and the medical teams as well. And now the second one is just about to arrive here. So you can see right behind me, the situation is quite dramatic. So the funeral service car is there, and it just got the bodies of the Syrians, those who were living in Turkey, and that died under the rubble. Now their bodies are being taken by these funeral services cars and then loaded on the other track. And a little bit later, they are going to take them to Syria to bury them in their home country. And also, there are families as well. These weary families are just coming, flowing in and out, and many of them are here just to pass the border and hopefully to meet their loved ones alive. So this is the situation that is going on here. So in northwest Syria, there are roughly around 4 to 5 million people, and the aid is desperately needed here because it has been more than a decade that the civil war simply has savaged northwest Syria. People were homeless, and you know, they have just made the makeshift homes, tents, and also the shelters. Now the disaster here is just overlapping a decade-long civil war and now the earthquake. So the situation is quite dire. As of now, more than 5,000 people have already died, but they have been killed by the earthquake that hit the region. And there are thousands of people, or the thousands of people now are really living through the hard conditions, particularly during the night. There is no tent, no proper food, no electricity, no water. We have nothing. So that's why the aid that is going through Syria is too little. They say it is too late and too tiny. So thousands of homes also here have been either collapsed or they're heavily damaged. And the health facilities here are struggling because they're also severely damaged. They're overwhelmed by the patients, those who are going through traumas or those who are still injured, and they are receiving very, very little. On the other hand, rescue efforts here are also extremely difficult. So we're coming from the Turkish side. Definitely the devastation, the scale of devastation is unimaginable. However, we can see that the rescue efforts are relentlessly continuing, and the sounds of the machines that are constantly working around the clock. But In Syria, that is not the case. They lack the modern equipment, the modern rescue equipment. They do not have the heavy lifting machineries. They do not have the diggers. They do not have the excavators. They even do not have the light to work through the night. So this is not a situation that people can work during the day and have rest during the night. The work, the rescue efforts needs to continue 24 hours a day. So that's why there are lots of grief, there is lots of grief, lots of complaints, lots of feeling of abandonment. They say that the international community simply has abandoned us and we are forgotten.
It really is so bleak, isn't it? Rasul Serdar speaking to us there live from the Turkish-Syrian border. Well, as we were hearing there from Rasul, anger has been building in Syria, with survivors saying that the international community has let them down. Abdelmonem Kassem Al-Razouk is one of those angered by the response.
I'm here to watch and remember. There are memories here. I see my sister's dress, her son's clothes, and all of them. Their smell is here. When they remove everything, I won't come back. Here's their car. Their water tank. The solar panels. Memories. The whole world let the Syrian people down. If this destruction was in Europe or any other foreign country, the whole world would have gathered here to rescue those killed. But here, no one cares. We're displaced. No one asked about us. And we were bombed, barrel bombs were dropped. No one cared about us. We're getting nothing from Turkey and not from the government side. We're here, besieged.